Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Congressman Chris Gibson, let's talk a little bit about ISIS. Now, for those people who don't know Chris's background, West Point, PhD, commander in the theaters of operation, I would not trust anybody more than you to talk about this, especially since you and I agree that the last thing we have really wanted are boots on the ground abroad, American boots. Can you sort of give us a little bit of your latest thinking on this?
Absolutely. So first of all, just for clarity, this is an enemy that we're going to have to deal with. I mean, this is an evil enemy that is really distorting Islam and trying to convince the world that this struggle is a struggle between who they describe as believers versus non-believers. Nothing could be further from the truth. They kill, these Islamic extremists kill more Muslims than anyone else. And, you know, I saw this firsthand. I mean, this is a rebranded enemy, but this was Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Al-Baghdadi was one of their leaders. He leads now the Islamic State. And our paratroopers, we saw this up close and personal. In our sector in Mosul, they executed at point-blank range Iraqis who were doing nothing more than trying to help their country have a better day. So, you know, we're not going to be able to deter this enemy. We're going to have to defeat them. The question is, what's the smartest way to do that? Well, let's recognize where their purported or at least endeavoring strength is, and that is in the Muslim world to try to fool Muslims to sending them recruits and fundraising, sending them resources. So this is why I have made the point to the administration and my colleagues that the smartest way to deal with this real threat is to support Muslim nations and Muslim people who are standing up to this extremism. I mean, you now have not only Iraq and the Kurds, but the Jordanians, Egyptians. Significantly, you have Sunni Muslims standing up to this Islamic extremism. And I think that is the key point here, because not only can you neutralize their pernicious military capability, but you lessen their ability to recruit and fundraise by fooling Muslims around the world when their main face of the conflict is Muslim nations and people standing up to this extremism. That's why I have supported the efforts to help with Iraq and the Kurds and now the Jordanians and the Egyptians, but I don't support the escalation into Syria. We have not set the conditions. We don't have a political foundation from which to take concerted and effective action in Syria. This is why I voted against arming the so-called Syrian, moderate Syrian rebels. We ascribe the name Free Syrian Army on them. There is no Free Syrian Army. These are disparate rebel groups. The one thing they all agree on is they hate Assad. And if we think that we're going to arm, equip, and train them, and they're going to go after the Islamic State, then we're just kidding ourselves. And so they're militarily incompetent, and they're politically untrustworthy, and it's not good strategy for us. It won't be effective, and we'll frustrate ourselves, and we'll further suck ourselves into a regional conflict. It's not the way to proceed. We should be focusing on helping Iraq and the Kurds, and to the extent that the Jordanians and Egyptians are ready to lead on this, helping them, and then focusing in Syria on diplomatic work. We can do this. We can work with our friends and allies across the region and the world, put more pressure on Assad. He's got up to $25 billion abroad. We should freeze that money. He's going to complain about that. We understand that. But we can unfreeze it, maybe even give him some of it if he's willing to leave. I'm not mandating that, but I'm suggesting a course of action is to try to do more to leverage and bring about a peace between some of the rebel groups and the Syrian government, because there is capacity in the Syrian government. And if we can get some legitimacy, broader legitimacy in the Syrian government, then we will be in a position to help that from a political foundation like we're doing in Iraq. So what we need to do is proceed smartly. You know, what concerns me is some of my colleagues, well-intentioned, good folks, both sides of the aisle, they're like, well, we have to do something. No, we need to do something smart. If we proceed in the wrong way, we're going to escalate this, and we could very well end up with worse outcomes. Some people are saying, well, this is the worst that it could be. I don't believe that. I mean, what if this ends up in a regional war? What if Israel is involved in this? What if we end up with Russia involved? There's a lot of permutations that could be worse than the current setting, in as much as I'm very concerned about the current setting. So I'm trying to argue for a smart way forward here. From everything I've read to date, and I'm willing to learn and listen, but at the moment, I don't support this latest AUMF because I think that the strategy will be doomed to fail.
And the idea of boots on the ground is a no-no as far as you're concerned.
Well, only because it won't be effective. Again, mm-hmm. I would tell you that based on my experiences, you can't take anything off the table,
yeah.
But it still raises the question, what's the smartest way forward? In the minute that we start to put our face as the lead in this effort,
sure.
What we end up doing is inadvertently, but we help the Islamic State recruit and fundraise.
Sure.
When Muslim nations and peoples lead the way on this, when the Islamic State goes into these madrasas around the world and they try to make their case, people say, wait a minute, you know, you're killing more Muslims than anyone else. And I'm watching Iraq and the Kurds and the Jordanians and the Egyptians, and they're standing up to you. We're not going to send you fighters. And you are, by the way, they're in the lexicon. There is a term in Islam called takfiri. And forever, for centuries, there has been a fight over who is the takfiri. Takfiri, another way, is the apostate, the imposter, you know. And so I watched this unfold in Iraq, where the mainstream Muslims were calling the extremists takfiri, and the extremists were calling the mainstream takfiri. So there's this conflict over who is the true advancer of the Muslim cause. And so now that we have this moment when you have Muslim nations and people standing up to this, this is the way we should proceed.
I only have 2 minutes here, but I wanted to ask you about Netanyahu coming to talk to the Congress. What do you make of it?
Well, look, if it were my decision, if I were the speaker, I would have consulted with the president. But, you know, look, as a representative, I go to hear these remarks. You know, I don't let politics inject into this. I'm going to be going to this talk as well. And I'll say one other thing on this, respectfully. You know, when the president says he doesn't want to inject himself into the domestic politics of Israel, I get that. But put yourself now in the shoes of ordinary Israelis. I think, to me, it's pretty clear who he does not support going into this election, given how much he's protested about this. To me, whereas I've just said moments ago, I would have proceeded differently had I been Boehner. If I were Obama, President Obama, I would have proceeded differently. I mean, here's another way he could have proceeded. He could have even met with Netanyahu. He could have had a press conference and said, look, our people and the Israeli people have an affinity. There's a strong relationship. We'll never be divided. I want to make it clear, I'm not endorsing this guy right here. If you send him back as the prime minister, I'm going to work with him, but that's up to you. Now, that would have been a way that could have sustained the principle that the president was looking to advance here without having this now, you know, drawn out debate, which actually, if in my estimation, is actually injected more into domestic Israeli politics than anything else. Again, I say that respectfully. There are other people with strong views, and I'm just saying how I would have proceeded had I been the Speaker of the House or I been the President of the United States.
Representative Chris Gibson, New York's 19th District, in office since 2011. Chris, as always, we so much respect what you have to say. Your background on this stuff is extraordinary. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Alan, and best wishes to all the listeners out there.